Welcome back to Issues Etc. For just a few more minutes, Dr. Uwe Simonetto is still with us. We're concluding with the last few questions on the legal profession, the call to the bar. Then we're going to hear very interesting audio on the Book of Daniel television program. Have you heard about this? I've seen the previews for it, and it's supposed to make a big splash because it's controversial. We'll talk a bit about that controversy. I want to know if you saw it and what you think about it. We'll hear some audio from, I believe, the O'Reilly Factor, if I'm not mistaken, with a guest host on the Book of Daniel television program coming up here in just a few minutes. Then I want to hear from you, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Uwe, a couple final questions here. Someone says, look, the way to counteract the corruption in the legal profession is to have kind of a enclave of Christian lawyers, men of great principle and of deep Christian faith who practice Christian law for Christian people. And that's how it ought to work. How would you respond?
I like the idea of having Christians in the legal profession who act as Christians in the world. I mean, act according to the Christian standards in the world. But Christian law is a strange, is a sort of a misnomer. I mean, what is Christian law? I mean, you know, Christian law, the Mosaic law, and then a bit of the gospel stirred in. No, if indeed practicing and believing Christians were to decide to engage the world in the legal profession as in any other profession, that would indeed be a great thing if you had lawyers, more lawyers. There are plenty of course, who are Christians and who are practicing their law according to a Christian ethos. But if you had more lawyers, engaged lawyers, first-rate lawyers, coming from a Christian background with a mind firmly set on helping their neighbor, then indeed you would change things. And if you had sort of genius lawyers of the Alan Dershowitz variety driven by a Christian ethos, I think we would be quits in here.
Finally, then, you've said many times in the course of our conversations on lay vocation that a Christian living according to his vocation in the world, serving the neighbor in love, is going to get his hands dirty. And I can think of a profession, probably no better example at this point, of a profession where a Christian going into this godly vocation of law is going to get his hands dirty. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, first way, for example, to get your hands dirty is if out of love for your neighbor, you do a masterly job in defending a fiend and you get this guy off. Really, with all the good intention of serving your neighbor, and maybe even being convinced that he's not a fiend. And then he proves to be a fiend, and out he goes, and he behaves like a fiend, and you got your hands dirty. Does this mean that because that possibility exists, a Christian should not act in a Christianly way in his legal profession? No, it doesn't mean that at all. But yes, you get your hands dirty. Yes, like a journalist who writes a story and screws up, a lawyer will do so because the law isn't perfect. The law is not infallible. Lawyers are not infallible. Judges are not infallible. We know all this. We still have to endeavor to work on behalf of the neighbor. And yes, we should say over and over again every day that we discuss these matters, be prepared to get your hands dirty. That's what God invented water for and man invented soap for. And then we wash them again. That's fine.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist, a regular guest here on the program, director of the New Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. You can read an excellent article he has written called Called to the Bar by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Look for the links on the left-hand side of the homepage. Click there, scroll down, find Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe, thank you very much for being our guest. All right. For the remainder of this 20 minutes, this segment here, we're going to be talking about a new television program. You know, it used to be that all the television programs started in September, and you could keep track of them, but that's not the way it is anymore. The new television program called The Book of Daniel. Now, when I first saw the previews for this, I was intrigued. I saw a man in a clerical collar. I saw a family. I saw, at least in the previews, this family life, this man's everyday life. It seemed, at least at first glance, to be kind of a, maybe a little bit off color, but perhaps an attempt to portray the life of a clergyman in a realistic way, maybe a little overblown for television. So I watched with some interest as this preview unfolded. And to my surprise, and I actually was surprised in an age when it's hard to surprise anybody, the one character in this sitcom that I wasn't expecting to see was right there at the very end of the preview, Jesus himself. Now, they've chosen kind of the typical Jesus actor to play Jesus, but in this new program, Jesus, yes, in fact, Jesus is a character. Well, I won't call it a sitcom. I'll call it a primetime drama, The Book of Daniel. Jesus is a character. He interacts with Daniel, the pastor in this case, and dispenses little bits of advice, kind of helps Daniel through his life. Now, after I saw this, I didn't know what to think. I thought to myself, well, first of all, this isn't the first time that Jesus has made appearance on television. He makes regular appearances on The Simpsons and other animated programs. Is this sacrilegious? Is this blasphemous? Well, last week, the O'Reilly Factor had a segment on the Book of Daniel. John Cash sitting in for Bill O'Reilly. Here's the piece, and when we come back, I want to hear from you. Did you see the first episode of The Book of Daniel? What did you think about it? Do you think Christians are right to boycott it or to complain about it? Do you think it's blasphemous? Do you think it's sacrilegious? Here's the piece from The O'Reilly Factor, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
I thought you were cutting back on that.
I have to play golf later. My back is killing.
Oh, come on.
In the back of the book segment tonight, that was a scene from NBC's new series, Book of Daniel. It's basically about an Episcopal priest who abuses painkillers and has a beyond dysfunctional family. But not everybody will be TiVoing the debut show tonight. That's because the show is under major fire from some Christian conservatives who think the whole thing is blasphemous. Four affiliates have even pulled the show out of fear that it would offend viewers. With us now is Stephen Battaglio, a senior correspondent for TV Guide. Please don't tell me you think this is a great show.
It's a good show. I've taken a look at it. And, you know, what happens when conservative groups protest against these shows that they haven't seen is that they bring them publicity, they create interest. This is a show that will probably get a better rating tonight than it would have otherwise.
Look, here's the story. Guy's an Episcopal priest. He's addicted to Vicodin. His wife is an alcoholic. His 16-year-old daughter smokes and sells pot and hides it in her teddy bear. The other son is having sex with the bishop's daughter. That's kind of like, I mean, there's no question that ministers have problems with their kids, but this is way, way out there, huh?
Yeah, but if you're going to do a TV show about a minister, you have to create tension. You have to create drama, or people aren't going to watch.
Well, wait a minute. There have been, you know, some shows on there that have done pretty well. The one about the angel that visited people, can't remember its name, it did pretty
Touched
darn
by an
well.
Angel? Sure, it
All right.
had a good run.
Here's what Tom Shale says. You know, he's not exactly your Bush conservative. He's the Washington Post critic. I cannot recall a series in which a greater number of characters seem so desperately detestable. A series with a larger population of loathsome dolts. There ought to be worse punishment than cancellation for a show that tries this hard to be offensive, and even at that crass task fails. I think he's probably didn't like the show.
He's one TV critic.
He's a big guy, Shales,
one TV critic
right?
Didn't like it. USA Today gave it a rave. Our TV critic and TV guide, Matt Rausch, liked it. So, you know, critics are going to look at shows, and some are going to like them, and some aren't.
Yeah, don't you think, though, that, you know, first of all, you know, they put Jesus in like a sprinkling of holy water. You know, so he sits in the front seat with a guy and says, don't take the Viking, and the guy goes, I got to go play golf. I mean, You know what? There's a sense out there, in all seriousness, there's a sense out there, and I know it's a television show, it's just so easy to bang on the Christians. You know, we're going to bang on the Muslims. We're not going to bang on, you know, any other religion here. But this is fair game.
There is
what do you think of that?
No, I disagree. I don't think it bangs on Christians. The show isn't about religion. The show is about a guy who's an Episcopal priest, but is just a guy. It has flaws, yeah, and has a family that has a lot of problems. You know,
to say the least, right?
Television is a great democracy.
Yep, I agree with that.
And you can
isn't there just too much trash on TV?
You can turn.
You know, I was talking with this guy from Canada who said there's too much violence on American TV, and I was sort of defending us. You know, when I think back, I wish I'd have said to him, "You're right. Too much trash."
What
on
you
TV.
Call as trash may be a terrific show to somebody else. We have a choice. You have more channels than you know what to
do. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
You know,
why are the affiliates dropping it now? They're you know.
There are several stations. I didn't know it was four. We've heard of two.
But it's up.
They're in small markets. They're in places where, you know, TV station managers don't like to get letters. They don't like to get complaints. They're afraid of people picketing outside. And it's easier for them to take a show off the air than for them to have to put up with that type of aggravation.
Well, look, it is a television show. I think it's way out of bounds. And, I mean, it's way over the top, which is why I don't think it's going to work. But you know what? It's TV, right? And we'll see what happens.
All right, that's a segment from last week's O'Reilly Factor with John Kasich sitting in for Bill O'Reilly talking about this program that aired on television. What time slot is it in? That's what I want to know. What time slot is it in? Well, it aired on NBC. Am I right there, Craig? It aired on NBC. The Book of Daniel. Jesus is a character. The family, highly dysfunctional. The man is an Episcopal priest. Is it sacrilegious? Is it blasphemous? Did you see it? That's the question. Did you see it? And if you did, what did you think about it? I mean, maybe you got 10 minutes into it and thought you'd had enough. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Now, just due to the fact that I have kids at home, and there's a lot of homework in the Wilkin house, we don't watch a lot of television, and what we do watch is usually watched after the kids are all in bed, off the tape. So, I have not seen this. So tell me, inform me, please, if you saw all of it or you saw a bit of it, what do you make of it? All I've ever seen is the previews. I know that people are all over this. The Family Research Council is complaining up and down the flagpole about this, saying this is blasphemous, this shouldn't be on television. Well, do you agree? Is it blasphemous simply to have Jesus as a character? Or is the way that Jesus is portrayed the blasphemy, if any, in the Book of Daniel? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, coming up at 4:30, so we've only got a few minutes here. You should call now, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Lauren Zellick is going to join us to talk about Christians and tattoos. We'll follow that with a little bit more open lines. A question for you on that one is, should they or shouldn't they? And what if your kids came home saying, I want one, or already got one? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Joe calls from his car. Joe, welcome.
Hi, Todd. First, I did not see the show. My question, though, is from what you're describing and what they described on your clip from O'Reilly, the show pretty well demonstrates what's in the human heart in terms of sin. And I guess the question would be, what do they do with the sin? How do they treat it? Is the sin treated as something okay, or is it shown to be what it is, sin? I don't know. Maybe someone knows the answer to that.
Actually, it's a very good comment, Joe, and thank you very much for bringing it to our attention. Look, there is, I think, probably no form of entertainment that I can think of. I'm talking about spectacle, public entertainment, like television, movie, where sin is not going to be depicted. In fact, it is part and parcel of telling any story that our fallenness enters into it. Think about this very popular movie, The Chronicles of Narnia. I mean, it made a lot of money, still is making a lot of money, and will in the future. The whole element of sin is crucial to the telling of that story, of each and every character, of the quote-unquote bad guys. The question, as Joe rightly says, is what does the story do with it? How does it, not only how does it portray the sin, does it glamorize it, does it romanticize it, does it minimize it, but what in the course of the story happens with the sin? That's my question for the whole Jesus character. I'm going to make a... I haven't seen it. I've read about it and I've heard about it. But I'm going to make just kind of a thumbnail prediction here. If it lasts. If it lasts. The Book of Daniel. There might be, in the coming months, some people, some Christians, saying, you know, I've rethought the whole Book of Daniel thing, and I don't think it's blasphemous. I like the way they portray Jesus. He's nice, he gives good advice, he's friendly, and he helps Daniel through his problems. Now, I don't like all the sin that they depict, but they've given Jesus a good role here. Kind of the cheapest therapist you could ever have, who will appear at a moment's notice whenever you need him. Which is, I think, what a lot of Christians believe Jesus is. The cheapest therapist in the world, who is always on call. He's there to give you very gentle do's and don'ts. Oh, you don't want to do that? Okay, you know, you want to do this. And he's also there to kind of gently nudge you in the right direction and help you feel better about yourself. Or at least help you be the kind of person that you can feel better about at the end of the day. You know, the irony of this is that while evangelicals are up in arms saying this is sacrilegious and blasphemous, the Book of Daniel, the Jesus portrayed, as far as I can tell, the Jesus portrayed in this is their Jesus. Jesus the therapist. Now, that goes to Joe's question. What do you do with the sin? What do you do with the sin? I just don't even know if you could do it in a television drama. Have Jesus appear in the seat next to Daniel and say, I died for your sin. I forgive you. That kind of stuff just doesn't make good entertainment. It's great theology, but good theology is very unentertaining. But Jesus, the therapist, I mean, it's like having Dr. Phil on call for you all the time. Except he wears a robe and a beard. Just a thumbnail prediction. Now, we got a great email from John in Detroit. He watched it. Okay, so he has a few comments to make about it, and let's see. I'll just give you the highlights of his email. First, he starts out by saying, I bet Wilkin is going to say something in the coming weeks about the new TV series, The Book of Daniel. He's right. I mean, we have to say something about it. So he gives us permission to use his comments. He says, if you look at it from a literary point of view and avoid seeing it as a theological work, it isn't theological, and he says he'll tell us why a little bit later. It fits into three literary genres. Postmodernism, a tiny bit of Marxist literal theory, and it's mostly anti-Aristotelian. That's Aristotle. Daniel was an Episcopal priest, but that's only a device. Now, I agree here. I just don't think you can do... Whenever you depict a clergyman, I'll tell you right off the bat, there are no more boring people in the world than clergymen. They're the most boring people. I'm one of them. Most boring people in the world. I choose my friends carefully. That's why I have so very few. And only a few of them are clergymen. Why? Boring. Okay. You just don't make good television out of clergymen. But he says, that's a device. It only plays service in order to create a sense of moral ambiguity. Daniel is a pill-popping priest who likes to take the Lord's name in vain, yet sees him all the time and talks to him. Daniel's wife? Alcoholic. Mother? Senile. His bishop, a woman. She also likes pills. And I'm sorry, that was the most jarring thing in watching the long trailer for this, was seeing a woman with the bishop's mitre on her head. It was just jarring to me. But get used to it, folks. Coming to a church near you. Daniel's father, also a bishop, seems conservative and yet is cheating on the mother with Daniel's bishop. Ooh. The son one is sleeping with the daughter of someone on the church council. Son two is gay. Daughter is selling pot to finance her love of drawing comics. And the housekeeper, smoking pot. Brother-in-law embezzled money. Sister-in-law having a lesbian affair. Boy, this just sounds like middle America, doesn't it? A lesbian affair with the church secretary, and Daniel has a friend who's a Catholic priest who's a member of the mafia. Now we're just into stereotypes, aren't we? He says, tragedy lies on the edge, shadowy edge of farce. Oh, that's a great line. John, did you borrow that from somebody or can I steal it? Tragedy lies on the shadowy edge of farce. But in this case, no tragedy happens. It isn't funny. So what's the point? Now, if they were going to lampoon a priest and his family, that's one thing. If you're going to lampoon a priest and his family, then you've got something going. You're funny. But it's not funny, says Joe. I'm sorry, John. He writes, in the book of Daniel, there are too many tragedies going on to identify with one, and one is left with a sense of moral ambiguity. In farce, moral ambiguity makes us laugh. The popular television show Frasier was a farce. Horrible things were always happening, and unusual events were always coming together that in real life would be tragic, but they were played for laughs because so many bad things coming together is implausible. That's kind of the tragedy of errors, or the comedy of errors, they used to say. I guess I'd rather have them laughing with Jesus as a character than just generating moral ambiguity. He concludes by saying this, John, the show is one attack of moral ambiguity after another, but it isn't for the point of getting you not to believe in God, because God can be postmodern. It is strictly for the cause of postmodernism, which is the logical conclusion of Marxism. Marxism wants you to tear society apart by taking a respected class and tearing it from all its moral authority. Postmodernism wants to tell you that a society with no morals is the synthesis that Marx had as his goal. If everyone is morally ambiguous, then there is only the material world out there for you, and all human behavior is a function of the environment, whether or not Jesus shows up. And the viewer is left free to believe or not to believe, so long as the viewer accepts the Marxist tenets that morality is just an outmoded social construct, and moves to the postmodern age in which moral ambiguity is the norm. That's what John writes about the book of Daniel. Excellent, by the way, John. So what is Jesus? What's the character of Jesus in this thing? You know, in the old days, they had the thing in drama or in theater called Deus Ex Machina. You know what this was? When all was lost and things couldn't get any worse, the God would descend and make everything right or fix it. They call it Deus Ex Machina because he would be lowered through some sort of mechanical device onto the stage and make his appearance. Well, this Jesus, apparently in the book of Daniel, I could stand corrected. This Jesus in the book of Daniel, and perhaps this is not the blasphemy, but just the tragedy of the real thing, is not Deus Ex Machina, not one who descends to do what only God can do, but who pops up here and there to do what, well, any half-decent therapist could do, and do it for free. The greater tragedy, I think, no, the greater tragedy, I believe, is that this Jesus isn't that different from the Jesus being preached in a lot of Christian pulpits. They will decry the book of Daniel as a program, but the Jesus there, if they look carefully, they might find familiar from the one being preached to them. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Justification in the Scriptures, old and new challenges to the doctrine by which the church stands or falls, and the Holy Spirit as giver, gift, and gifts are the themes for the annual symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. This year's symposia begins January 17th and ends January 20th. Now, for a complete list of speakers, symposia schedule, or to register online, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call area code 260-452-2247. The fellowship alone is worth the registration fee, and you can experience the Christ-centered, cross-focused worship life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. It's the 2006 Symposia Series, January the 17th through the 20th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. For more information, issuesetc.org or call area code 260-452-2247.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. The Florida Supreme Court decision to strike down vouchers in that state has school choice advocates wondering about the fallout. Florida's high court ruled that using vouchers for private schools is unconstitutional because the state is required to provide uniform schools throughout the state. But the only thing uniform about the schools in Angela Mack's Miami area school district is that they're mediocre, scoring on average a C, or the lowest score in the state. Mack has two kids in high school and four more on their way up.
They was going to school every day, basically, and nobody even knew who they was. And to be in a surroundings like that, it really, kids lose confidence.
Since changing to a private school, paid for by vouchers, her kids are all getting A's and B's. The Florida Education Association, one of the parties to the suit, acknowledges that many schools are in trouble, but claims it's not their fault. They blame the students. Spokesman Mark Pudlow.
There's all kinds of reasons why these schools fail, in large part because the students that are in those schools come from poor backgrounds.
Ralph Connor of the Heartland Institute thinks the battle is headed to your state.
You're going to find there's probably more states like Florida that have these uniformity provisions, but there will be a way of getting around it.
The Florida Supreme Court sidestepped the issue of whether state funds can go to religious schools, saying that since private schools and public schools were not uniform to begin with, the church-state issue was irrelevant. At the federal level, in 2002, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Cleveland, Ohio's voucher program was constitutional and did not violate the Establishment Clause. Meanwhile, Mack has no idea how to get around her dilemma. There's just no way she's going to let her kids go back to failing schools.
And if the school continues to be F school, I'm going to have to do whatever I have to do, too, to make sure that they get what they need to get out of high school.
Apparently, with no help from the government. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob.
Mornings on AM 850 KFUO offer you a Christian way to start your weekday. Hi, I'm Paul Clayton, inviting you to hear your inspirational Christian favorites, great guests, and the information you need to prepare you for the road ahead. And after the morning show at 9:30, stick around for Focus on the Family on AM 850 KFUO.
Here's what Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Angus Manoj has to say about our Book of the Month for January. Quote, for C.S. Lewis, true education is a way to free our thinking from the spirit of the age and to humble our ego to objective truth, unquote. The book is titled Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis on Education. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040. Irrigating Deserts.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilk, and we're coming to you live this... Is it Monday? It feels like Thursday to me already. It's Monday, January the 9th. Lauren Zellick is going to join us here in just a moment. We're going to be talking about Christians and tattoos. Of course, along with the tattoos come the body piercings. We were at a restaurant a couple weeks ago in the evening waiting for a table, and I saw... could not tell the actual sex of this person until they turned around, but I assumed it to be a young man with a number of very interesting piercings and tattoos almost entirely covering everything that was exposed. And someone might say, well, okay, that's the extreme. There's a new program on about tattoos and tattooers and those who receive them. Miami Ink. I've seen the previews for it. Is this unchristian? I've seen seminary students walking around here the campus of Concordia Seminary with tattoos. Not just on the arm or on the, you know, wrist or whatever, but around the neck. We're going to be talking about that here for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. Before we get started, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January delves into the wisdom of C.S. Lewis, not on the Chronicles of Narnia and not on English prose and not on lay theology, but on education, his chosen vacation. Vocation. It's called Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis on Education. It's $22.99 plus shipping and handling, and you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can Order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 25 minutes to do so today. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. You ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis, on Education. Lauren Zellick is a college director at Moon Valley Bible Church, adjunct professor at Phoenix Seminary, and author of the cover story in the latest Christian research journal titled Under the Needle, An Ethical Evaluation of Tattoos and Body Piercings. Lauren, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Do you have a tattoo?
I do. I have numerous tattoos.
Numerous tattoos.
Yeah, about five.
Now, I have none, although that's because my wife would brain me. Okay,
yeah.
But in my younger days, I probably would have gone out and gotten something,
yeah.
just to do it. Why? Can you answer that question for me?
I got my tattoos to remind me of spiritual truths. I got my first one when I was 19, and it's water waves around my calf, which was to remind me of being washed clean because of Jesus. And I have praying hands tattooed on my shoulder to remind me to pray. And a Trinity sign tattooed on my back to remind me that God will never leave me nor forsake me. And I have two sacred hearts tattooed on my arms, which have the banner that say love and grace to remind me of truth, of who God is and what Jesus has done.
How do people react when they see the tattoos, especially Christians?
Usually they're questioning. They want to know why. Well, first of all, I think they want to know what it is and what it means. And then there's this question of why would you do such a thing?
And you give the response like you've given to me here?
Usually, yeah. I always take the opportunity to share what the tattoos mean and what they symbolize to me, especially if other people have tattoos. I think it's a great discussion where I could find out a lot about a person by finding out what their tattoos mean to them and why they got them.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, what a tattoo is besmirching or desecrating the image of God? There are numerous Bible passages that talk about man being created in the image of God, and so we should not be doing the tattooing or the piercing of the body.
Right. When you look at the image of God, theologically you could take four aspects of it, where there could be the structural and functional and relational and teleological aspects of it. And I just would ask the person, first of all, what Bible passages are they going to? And then also, what or how would a tattoo desecrate one of these aspects of the image of God? And usually people go to Leviticus 19:28 that says that we shouldn't be tattooed on our bodies. And again, I would ask them to just read the passage before that, which says that we aren't to shave the sides of our beards, and ask them, how do they interpret the Old Testament, and how does that apply to the life of a believer?
So in other words, are you to read that passage, Leviticus 19:28, in its context, would indicate that there must have, for the Old Testament people of God, been a reason to prohibit the making of tattoos or cuts on the body, things like that.
Right.
That had more to do with that context than with some sort of enduring command for everyone at all times.
Right. Contextually, I believe that this command was given as part of the holiness code, that it was given to protect people from disease, I think, which would come from inflicting harm upon themselves, from gashing themselves. But also, I think the deeper and more serious issue is to prevent idolatry, because these were practices which were done by their neighbors as a form of idol worship to Baal.
Lauren, everyone has, at this point, walked through an airport or down the street or sometimes even into a church and seen someone who is tattooed extensively.
Right.
And along with that sometimes goes all, kind of the extensive body piercing.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial impulse is to say, as my daughter would say, she's 14, this person has issues.
Right.
How do you respond to that?
They may have issues. I'm not saying they don't. I just would say, though, that that's a knee-jerk reaction, and that I would hope that the Christian community would be able to look deeper than that. Because when we look at the Bible, too, we see that God doesn't judge on outward appearances, and humans aren't to do that either.
Then let's talk to kind of clear away and kind of clear the ground here a little bit. the obvious abuse that could be made of marking the body or piercing the body. And the more obvious one seems to be the kind of images that are put on the body.
Right.
Talk about those, please.
Well, I think when we evaluate the morality of tattoos, I think you do have to ask the question, what do they represent? And if they're symbols of sin or things which are profaning to God and offensive to Him, then I think definitely those are things that shouldn't be tattooed on the body.
So it would be similar to any kind of image that a Christian would want to employ in their life, whether it's on their body or not.
Right. Whether it's on a T-shirt, whether it's on a body, whether it's a painting you hang in your house.
Someone says, look, the real problem with the tattoos is that things people believe, say, and are adamant about things when they're young, usually when people get their tattoos,
mm-hmm.
that they will later regret having believed or said or held as held so adamantly.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, it's not wise. It's not prudent. What do you say?
I think that's a good question, and that's a good point. When people consider getting tattoos, they have to realize the permanence of it. I think, though, that that would help people consider what they would get tattooed. I think that the fact that it'll be with me my whole life is comforting to me to respond, because I don't want 50 years from now my grandchild to say, what does that praying hands mean on your arm, and I have no prayer life, or my faith is dying, or I've turned away from God. I think that it's a reminder to me of what God has done in my life and who I am as His child. So there's comfort in it there. But if someone was to get something that is that they like, say, a band or something like that, that they like as a child, I think that definitely those would become passé as they grow up, and it would just become foolish.
This seems to have a lot to do, really, with symbols. You've mentioned that already a couple times, or images. Christians, there is a school of thought among Christians, I don't happen to belong to that school, that eschews all symbols, period, that would find a symbol, say, of Christ on your upper arm, something like that, or a crucifix tattooed into your body, wrong in two ways. One, we shouldn't depict these things, and two, it should not be depicted on the body.
Yeah, I think that throughout the Bible, though, that God has used a lot of symbols to remind people of truth, whether it's in the Old Testament speaking through the prophets, speaking metaphorically, I think, but Isaiah saying that the people will write on their hands belonging to the Lord, and that God even says, behold, I've inscribed you on the palms of my hand to His people. But also in the book of Revelations, there's the infamous mark of the beast that unbelievers will take as a symbol of their devotion to Him, but also believers seem to receive a different mark on their foreheads, and that's the name of God or of Christ. So it seems that throughout the biblical literature, that symbolism is a way that God uses to proclaim truth and to remind people of truth that He's spoken to them.
Lauren Zellick is our guest. He's college director at Moon Valley Bible Church, adjunct professor at Phoenix Seminary, and author of the cover story in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Under the Needle, An Ethical Evaluation of Tattoos and Body Piercings. We're talking about Christians and tattoos. Feel free to join the conversation, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You argue that the practice of body piercing and perhaps of tattooing as well was a common practice, an established practice, among the ancient Israelites. Explain.
Well, looking at the Old Testament, you see that just maybe a more general explanation would be that slaves would be pierced through their ear, and that would symbolize devotion to their slave owner. But culturally, it seems at this time that tattoos were common amongst the Israelite neighbors. And as I mentioned before, it was usually a sign of idolatry or worship to their false gods. And it seems that this practice may have crept into the Israelites because the command is given against it in Leviticus. So it seems like it's a problem. I can't see that Moses would have this command in there unless it was an issue amongst the Israelites.
You also argue that rightly used, tattoos and even piercings can, rather than a desecration of the image of God, be a demonstration of the image of God. How
right.
so?
Well, I think that when you look at the aspects of the image of God, first of all, I don't think that tattoos or body piercings desecrate it inerrantly. I think that they do have the ability to demonstrate that the image of God. First of all, structurally, we're created with the ability to reason and to have free will and to think about things ethically. And I think that when people think about tattoos, that they have the ability to decorate themselves and to adorn themselves in ways which they think are aesthetically pleasing. And I think in just that aspect that we're free to do that. I think there is a limit to it, though, as I mentioned before, about what type of symbols that you're portraying on yourself, that I think they should be bound by how does this influence my relationship with God, my relationship with others, and my relationship with people in my church.
Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Phil, who calls from his car. Hi, Phil.
How you doing?
Very well.
I certainly wouldn't have a problem with a Christian having tattoos. Before I was a believer, you know, I got tattoos, one at the age of 15 and at 18. And now I guess I leave them on to remind me of who I used to be because they're not so nice. But and they're up high and they're kind of hidden. But doesn't Paul say, you know, about if you're going to offend somebody? I know it was over eating and drinking in Romans of foods that was sacrificed to other gods and things. And I mean, and we're really supposed to be separate from the worldly things. And I think today, tattooing and things like this is always represented in the biker lifestyle or the rebellion type of lifestyle. And I really think that if I mean, I know other people shouldn't look at you and judge you, but they do. And that's a fact that they do. And I don't want anybody to stumble.
All right, Phil, so he raises two good questions. One is that of the associations that sometimes go with tattoos and body piercings, Lauren, but also the scenario of the weaker brother that St. Paul sets up in Corinthians.
Right. In 1 Corinthians 8, he does talk about food sacrificed to idols and how do two believers, one who believes it's all right to eat food sacrificed to idols and one who doesn't, how do they relate? And he comes down to it being an issue of your conscience. And he says that we're to take great pains to make sure that we don't cause another brother to violate their own conscience. I don't think that means that things that we do won't offend people. I think that's just true. That's nature, that sometimes things that we choose to do, other brothers or sisters may not agree with. I think Paul's issue is don't cause your weaker brother to violate his own conscience. So I think it's a touchy situation where I think it would be difficult for us to think everything I do, there's this possibility that I'm going to offend people because it seems that any choice we make, there's that possibility that another Christian brother or sister may not agree with it. Again, I think what Paul is saying is that we shouldn't be trying to convince this weaker brother, you know what, it's all right if you do this, and cause them to violate their own conscience in that way.
St. Paul, also in connection with food, makes the argument, all things in moderation. It is that the Christian enjoys these things as gifts of God in a godly way, and as long as he can do so without sin and faith, that he ought to consider that the bounds of Christian freedom. Is there a boundary that's crossed, say, in the instance of someone who wants to cover their entire body with tattoos? What statement are they making? What does this tell us about the person? And should there be kind of this boundary where someone says, look, we've gone beyond moderation here?
I think Paul's ethic, it seems that it's guided. It seems that when it comes down to in Galatians, he says to be led by the Spirit. Also, he says that we're to be led by love, that this fulfills the law of God, and also that we aren't supposed to cause another brother to stumble. So to say whether or not full sleeve tattoos, that's shoulder to wrist tattoos, or full body tattoos, whether or not they're immoral, I'm not willing to say yes or no to that. I put that on the believer who's doing that to how is their conscience before God? Is this action, are they living a life that's led by the Spirit, a life of love?
There is, I mean, this is kind of a fringe thing, Lorne, but I've seen this here and there on television where the combination of tattoo and piercings becomes an effort at, I think they call it body modification.
Right.
Where people actually have tattooed and pierced themselves to look like animals or mythical creatures.
Right.
Where does this fall on the continuum for you?
I think that that's where you start getting into violating the structural and functional aspects of the image of God, where it becomes that's a touchy situation, because then we have to say, what about surgeries that we have to make us healthier or to remove disease? I still think, though, if people are voluntarily doing this for some reason to look aesthetically pleasing, that I have a problem with that, just based on how God has created us.
All right, then let's bring it into kind of the everyday scenario, which most parents, maybe grandparents, might face. The kid comes home, boy or girl, makes no difference, and says, I want a tattoo, or I want a body piercing, beyond just what, you know, many Christians consider to be innocent and socially acceptable, like an earring or something.
Right.
What are the questions that need to be asked and answered here, Lorne?
First of all, if they're wanting a tattoo, and if this is a child, you have to find out, is it legal in your state even to be tattooed at your age? Usually you have to be over 18, and I think that's a good boundary for it, to have them think on it for a while. Also, I think there's a lot of questions that you need to ask is, how is this, first of all, what is my motivation for getting the tattoo? Also, where would I want to go get tattooed or pierced? Is the parlor clean? Also, what will other people think about it, whether it's my parents or church members? And then also, how does this body piercing or tattoo affect my relationship with Christ?
What do you mean by that last question?
Well, I think that for myself and for looking at tattoos, I feel that there's somewhat of an encouragement, is that I'm reminded when I look at my arms or if I look at my tattoos that, yes, it's true that God does love me and does show me his grace. Yes, I have the Holy Spirit and he's present with me. And I feel that it's an outward symbol of an inward truth. So I feel that there is somewhat of a help with me. It may be comparable to people who wear crosses or things like that. It's an identification, but it's also a reminder of who they are.
Steve calls from St. Louis. Steve, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi.
Hi.
Usually in movies and television, the character with the Christian symbols and tattoos is usually evil. And one example might be Robert Mitchum's character, Bible-quoting character in the 1950s movie The Night of the Hunter. He was a really warped, evil person.
So what's your conclusion?
I don't know. People... Christians with tattoos might get thrown in as being something wrong with them. I don't know.
Steve, thank you very much. Would you respond to that very briefly, and also to the person who would say, look, anybody can get the Sacred Heart on their shoulder, or anyone could have, just because they like the looks of it or the design of it, a Trinity symbol somewhere else on their body, and may have nothing whatsoever. It may just be they like the looks of that particular image with no belief behind it. Respond to both of those, if you would, Lauren.
First of all, I'm not too worried about what Hollywood says about who Christians are, and I'm not surprised that they would choose to say, hey, Christians that have tattoos, that there's something wrong with them, and that they're the evil characters. That doesn't prevent me from saying that tattoos are outright wrong, then, based on how Hollywood would interpret them. Secondly, people can get tattoos where they have no meaning to them, and I have problems with that. I would hope that there would be meaning to it, that we aren't being foolish with what God's given us, with our bodies or with our money and what we pay to have done.
Someone says to you, they see you, they get to know you, and then finally, in a moment where they feel like they can broach the subject, says, look, I just... think it's wrong for Christians to wear tattoos. How do you respond?
I say that that's fine. That's fine. If your conscience convicts you that way and that's how God has made you and that's what you feel is right, that I'm all right with that.
And they say, but so how can you do it?
Right. That's where we get into the discussion that Paul gets into in 1 Corinthians 8, that's this discussion. And I hope that the article brings up these questions when it will create dialogue for believers who have tattoos and believers who don't, and believers who think that they are fine to have and those who don't think that they're fine, that there would be a discussion going on and that hopefully believers would come to realize that, you know what, we're brothers and sisters in Christ based on our faith, that it's not based on whether we have tattoos or not, that we're to be united as the church to be able to reach the world for Jesus Christ. And that's the main issue. I feel like that doesn't cause disunity in my church anyways and with my students between believers who have tattoos and those who don't. We can come around and join around that we have the same faith, we have the same God, we're all children of Him based on our belief in Him.
Lauren Dzelak, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome. Thank you, Todd.
Lauren Dzelak is college director at Moon Valley Bible Church. He's adjunct professor at Phoenix Seminary, and he's author of the cover story in the latest Christian research journal titled Under the Needle, An Ethical Evaluation of Tattoos and Body Piercing. When we come back from this break, we're going to be spending some time with you. Open lines. What do you think? We've had a few callers already, but what do you think about the argument that tattoos, like so many other things in the realm of Christian freedom, are neither here nor there, and that while they could be abused, and certainly are abused, everyone can think of the examples of abuse, when used properly, do not desecrate the image of God that is your body? How would you respond to that? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I gotta wonder. I mean, my daughter has her ears pierced. I encouraged her to get her ears pierced because I like the way it looks on women when she was a little girl. She's promised me she's never going to get anything else pierced. But what if she came to me and said, I'd like to take this a step further? You know what my response would be? I mean, my initial response would be, no, this is enough. But what's my basis for drawing the line there? Or she comes home with the tattoo. What would you do? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If your child or your grandchild asked, Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, should I get a tattoo? I'm thinking about it. What would you answer? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.